Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. From the Popcorn Talk Network, the number one online broadcast network for movie talk, this is Bollywood, the show where we break down all you need to know about Bollywood and its movies.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Bollywood on the Popcorn Talk Network. We have been on a pretty long hiatus, but we are back and stronger than ever. So thank you, everyone, for your patience. I'm your host, Kanika Lal. Make sure to follow me on the web everywhere at Kanika Lal. And today, actually, we have a very special episode. I'm joined by a very powerful and brave individual, if I have to say myself. She's a filmmaker behind one of the most controversial, but I think much needed, documentary called India's Daughter, which was produced by the BBC network. And it's actually been banned in India. So I have Leslie Udwin here with me today to talk about that. Thank you so much for coming in. And also thank you so much for just making such a moving documentary that hit, I mean, not only in India and myself, but just women everywhere and men everywhere, you know, who really resonate with it. Could you just give us a small brief background on the documentary where it was based from, for people who don't know what this is about, from your own words?
So the first thing to say is it's not actually a BBC film or BBC produced.
Uh-oh.
The BBC...
Sorry, my mistake.
The BBC were the only broadcaster that actually invested some money, 40% right. of the budget, into the making of the film.
Right.
And therefore had co-producer status for making that as a co-production investment. But it is a film... motored by The Fire in My Belly and a production of Assassin Films, which is my production company.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat, as the world did, on the morning of the 17th of December, 2012, the morning after this horrific gang rape, and saw this explosion of reports about yet another
mm-hmm.
vile and evil violation of the human rights of women and girls. It wasn't at that point that I decided to make the film, because I've come across, as we all have, many such cases, never quite reported to this degree, but nonetheless, we know this happens on a daily basis,
yeah.
and not just in India, mm-hmm. throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
What was unique about this case, and what got me to go to India, leave my family for the best part of, well, I'm still away from them because I'm campaigning now,
yeah.
so it's been nearly 3 years.
Right.
Was the response to that gang rape.
Mm-hmm.
We have never seen so many people out on those streets, anguished, with expressing gut-wrenching pain and fury, and demanding in the most beautiful, civilized change. Demanding forward-thinking way, the change that is so long overdue for women and girls mm-hmm. across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I took this very personally.
Mm-hmm.
I was raped when I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were fighting for me. They were fighting
yeah.
for my rights as a woman to not be abused and violated. So the least I could do, I felt, was go out and join those protests. And the
yeah.
way a filmmaker joins protests is he or she makes a film about that
mm-hmm.
and amplifies those extraordinary and courageous voices. Now, here's the thing. This film should have been a platform of praise for India.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was India leading the world by example. I've never seen another country in the world stand up with so much courage and so much passion about this issue.
Yeah.
And instead of that, what has happened? It has brought shame on India, not because of the film or what the film contains or says,
mm-hmm.
but because of the ban.
Yeah.
And this ban must be lifted. It has to be lifted so that India can take its rightful place, leading the world by example and asking the other countries to join hands in global protest against this, the greatest unfinished business of our times,
mm-hmm.
according respect to the women who brought us into this world.
Definitely. And it's so unfortunate, though, because India's government is very backwards thinking. The protests that you saw, the protests that, you know, encouraged you to go out there and make a message, were by the younger generation, which I think, or I hope to think, they are the ones who are going to change little by little, day by day, India's backward thinking. Just to give a little bit more information, you interviewed the family of Jyoti Singh, the 23-year-old medical student who was brutally raped and murdered by 6 men. I want to know your whole journey throughout. I mean, your goals starting to make this documentary and who you interviewed and coming out of it, did those goals of what you wanted to state change? Or did your thinking of India's culture change? What was your personal journey through this documentary?
Well, to begin with, I made an absolute decision before setting out that I wouldn't have a narrator in this film, and my voice would be absent. I'm obviously aware that I'm not steeped in the culture. I have been going backwards and forwards to India. I made a film called East is East, which started a very special relationship with India. And for 14 years, I have loved India. And for 14 years, I've been going back and forth. And then I actually lived there for 6 months while I filmed West is West in the Punjab, which is the sequel to East is East. I speak some Hindi, you know, but I'm not steeped in the culture. And so I was very aware that what I really needed here, if I was to make an honest inquiry with integrity, was to hear only from the direct participants in this story and in this case. Now, did my goals change as far as who I interviewed? No, because I only spoke to and wanted to speak to the direct participants. But what did change was there were two in particular interviewees who I needed, badly needed for this film, and I never got. In the case of one, it was a very close friend of Jyoti, who had spent a lot of time with her at the physiotherapy college, and whose brother and father forbade her to come on camera. She gave me a research interview which cracked my heart in two, because through her, I knew everything I needed to know about Jyoti.
Were there any remarks you could say, or on her behalf, but I guess...
No, because, you know, it's a documentary is not a treatise of, you know, discursive points. So I could have had someone report what she said, but the power of a documentary is you being there in the moment, you living that point of view.
No, but I mean now, person. Could you say anything now? What she said touched your heart. Yeah, because I read that, you know, that her father and brother wouldn't allow her to be on camera. Yeah.
Well, it's patriarchy. It's control of women by men. It's unacceptable. And she should have stood up to that. But it's very hard for a girl to have that voice and that confidence to stand up against the patriarchs in her family because she's trained not to do that.
And the men probably feared she might get hurt too, don't you think, or no?
I think, to be honest, it was all a question of so much shame and dishonor adheres to the whole question of rape and rape victims. I think they thought, well, we're about to get her married. She's 23, the same age as Jyoti. And we don't want her associated with this distasteful subject. It's distasteful when they think about it. It seems not to be distasteful when they do it. Here's what I learned about Jyoti. She was exemplary in fighting against the very thing that crushed her. And that is the greatest sadness. I heard stories from her close friend, like she would be walking down a street, and you know how men stare at you because they think they're entitled to do that. She'd be stared at, she would stop, walk up to the man staring at her, look him in the eyes and say, "What are you looking at? I'm not your property." She was a fighter.
She was a voice.
She was a voice.
Yeah.
She was empowered. She was in a Vikram rickshaw one day with a number of her friends, and one of her friends whispered in her ear that a man on this Vikram rickshaw had touched her leg inappropriately. Jyoti stopped the rickshaw, ordered these boys off the rickshaw, and started yelling at them. You know, she was not going to take anything. Mm-hmm. She would say things. Her boss, at one point, tried to get rid of her to rationalize staff. He just, I guess, wanted to save some money.
Hmm.
Well, she really needed that job because that job was paying for her expenses.
Right.
And she simply, honestly said to him, if you fire me, this place is going to fall apart. You have no idea how I am the glue that sticks.
Wow.
She was confident. She was empowered. Yeah. She's the new young woman of India.
Wow.
And it's no coincidence that what we heard from the rapists and their lawyers was she had to be taught a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
She fought back, and that's why it went so badly for her.
Exactly.
She was out at night with a boy who was neither her husband nor her brother. She had to be taught a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was one moment in my very long interview with Mukesh Singh, mm-hmm. who drove the bus that night, who I interviewed for 16 hours.
Wow.
And there was one moment at which, when he said this to me, I said, are you telling me that your brother Ram Singh, who he said had to teach them a lesson because they were sitting together on the back seat of the bus, is he the moral police? I mean, I just explained. Mm-hmm. That was the only time with Mukesh that I exploded. It's just, you know, it's...
I was actually going to ask because, yes, you interviewed Mukesh Singh, who drove the bus, and he allegedly said he wasn't involved with any of the actions, correct? He just drove the bus.
That's what
he said. And you also interviewed the rapist's family. And of course, Dorothy's parents, which was so emotional, but they were so well spoken and so well, you know, put together. I was impressed by that. But at any point, did you have any small, this could be a horrible question, but any small sympathy or anything?
Oh, yes.
For Mukesh or the family, the rapist's family? You've interviewed a bunch of them, so.
100%. That was a big shock for me personally. Because having been raped at 18 and having said nothing about it for 20 years, and I'm so ashamed of that fact, I have to tell you, I should have reported that guy. I don't even remember his name anymore to report him now, or I would.
Right.
I was so scared because I've never made a documentary before. I've never interviewed people before.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how I would react when I sat opposite these rapists because I've been through the pain and the trauma of it.
Exactly.
And I worried that these demons would rise up in me and that I might hit one of them.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I actually practiced on four other rapists who were not involved in this case, one of whom, I have to tell you, raped a 5-year-old girl. And I sat with him for 3 hours. But I was so shocked to find that I didn't feel anger. I mean, I lost my temper once in 31 hours of interviews with rapists, and I've just told you about that moment.
Right.
When suddenly Ram Singh, the leader of that gang of gang rapists, mm-hmm. you know, is referred to as though he were the moral police of that society. But I didn't feel anger. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I felt pity.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I felt pity is, and we really need to think about this, is that it was so obvious, so blindingly obvious, as I sat with these seven rapists over 31 hours, that they're normal human beings. They're ordinary men. They're not monsters. They're not psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
It would be so much more comforting if they were. And the whole effort of society is to distance itself from them and to say, we'll hang them, we'll be rid of the problem.
Right.
They're nothing to do with us. These are monsters. These are... No, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They are the product of what we teach them. We have taught them to look at women as subordinate, as not worthy of the same respect, as of lesser or no value. They see women beaten by their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how on earth do we expect them to behave? Why would we expect them to be paragons of virtue when we teach them how to rape
mm-hmm.
and how to hit
mm-hmm.
and how to traffic?
Now, what you sort of, I would say, investigated, you wanted to get the mentality of these rapists. You wanted to know what made them cross that line of doing it and thinking about doing it. I think I heard you say that in an interview. God, now I always lose focus when I'm like in a really intense. But there was some negative backlash on, of course, there's a lot of negative backlash, which we'll get into on this documentary. But do you agree or disagree that, or first of all, do you think that this mentality they have represents all the men in India?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
In the film, there are more examples of enlightened, positive role models of Indian men than there are negative. Mm-hmm. It's only Indians who don't dwell on that or see that or focus on it.
Yeah, they really thought you put India to a bad light, but you...
The rest of the world is amazed by the courage, the tenacity, the passion of men and women who came out onto the streets. The rest of the world joins me in admiration and praise for them. And it's only when they hear about the ban that the rest of the world starts looking at India as a laughingstock, which I'm sorry to say it is.
Yeah.
Let's call a spade a spade.
Right.
They have shot themselves royally in the foot.
Yeah.
They're worried about shame. Then don't ban a film that's asking for change.
Mm-hmm.
Are they asleep, actually? Are they not thinking?
I know.
Because that's the only way I can explain what they've done here.
I went to India recently. I was there in February and March, and I was with my parents. We were in an area of Delhi, and I also wanted to film and just get the overall gist of it. And my dad actually asked a group of men who were very sweet. He asked them, Delhi is known to be the rape capital of this world. I mean, what do you guys think of that? And they actually said, you know, it happens in a lot of poorer sections of India and in Delhi. So do you agree with the discrepancy of class having to do with their mentality?
No.
At all?
It's another way of trying to distance yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who says it happens in only certain cultures is lying to themselves because it happens in every single culture.
Mm-hmm.
It happens in the USA. In the USA, one in four girls on college campuses is raped.
The US is actually more like the enemy within. It's more in terms of family and friends who do it to each other, right?
But so is it in India.
Yeah, that's true too, actually.
It is. And I think the figure in India of known acquaintances or family members who rape, I think it approaches 90%. Mm-hmm. It's quite serious. It is an endemic mindset to the whole world. And why is that? Because we've always been patriarchal societies.
Yes, yeah.
Now, people don't volunteer giving up their power and their entitlement, do they? They often have to be forced to do that.
Right.
And we have to force them to do that. Because it is that mindset that is responsible for all these symptoms of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
The disease is not rape. The disease is not the rapists. The disease is how the rapists are programmed to think. And if you grow up and see a girl child being born to your neighbor, for example, and relatives come round and they're disappointed and they commiserate and they say, next time it'll be a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you teaching them? If you grow up to see your older sister waiting to eat last at table because tradition and culture tells you that the men eat first, then the mother, and then the girls, no matter what their age is. I mean, I stood in Ravi Das camp and saw Vinay Sharma being one of the rapists, his brother, who was 11 years old, screaming, attacking his sister, who was 17 years old, talking to her like she was dirt. And I stopped him and I started yelling at him. And my crew got very angry with me. Because, of course, we weren't that welcome in Ravi Das camp where four of the rapists lived. And they got angry with me and they said, it's not your culture. You can't tell him how to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I damn well can tell him how to behave because he's an 11-year-old squirt of a boy that dares to talk with disrespect for his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not stand by and hear that happen and not comment upon it. We actually had a little row amongst the crew that day because of what I did, you know. Now, by the third time I met that kid at Ravi Das, because we kept coming back, of course, we filmed a lot there. He was like a little friend. He was shaking my hand, and I kept saying to him, you remember, you treat your sister well. And we were then talking about it in that way.
Really?
So what is the point of not confronting it? I'm not saying he's changed.
Right.
But at least there was some recognition.
Yeah.
At least another thought has been put into his head for him to contemplate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good thing, isn't it? We have to face these things. Mm-hmm. This film holds a mirror up, not just to India, but to the world.
Yeah.
And the film ends with the climactic exclamation mark of a roll call of statistics from around the world. Statistics not only of rape, but of domestic violence, of female genital mutilation. Here's one in Egypt. 96%. 96% of women have been genitally mutilated. Why? Because they have to be controlled. They must experience no sexual pleasure.
Right.
Because that way they might become independent or go elsewhere and move away from their monster of a husband. You know, I mean, what are we talking about? It's 2015.
I know.
Let's get real.
Exactly. That's why I keep saying, like, backwards thinking. The elder, at least, you know, the generation above me.
Yes.
Kind of going back a little bit to the mentality topic we were talking about, a lot of hard-hitting quotes in the documentary, I could list them for a long time, but the defense lawyer saying, you know, if you put a diamond out on the street, a dog will take it, or if a woman is like a flower, she's only worshipped in the temple, but if in the gutter, and then the rapist saying... a girl shouldn't fight back. A girl shouldn't be roaming around 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night. Tons of these comments. What I think shocked me the most is just the hypocrisy of what that showed and Indian culture. So I actually saw a reaction piece to your documentary. Someone kind of just interviewed a bunch of girls and boys on the street. And one girl said... we pray to Lakshmi, who is a goddess, for wealth. We pray to Saraswati, another goddess, for knowledge. And here you are saying this isn't a culture for women. What can you comment on the hypocrisy of these men and Indian religion and culture? Because India is such a spiritual, religious place. It just shocked me that they would say that. I mean, A, I see it from the point where, after all, what can they say? They're the freaking rapists. And the defense lawyers, what are they going to say except try to defend their... On the other hand, it's like...
They're not saying
they
it
went
in
to
defense.
An extent... Exactly.
They're saying it because they believe
the limit.
It.
Yeah.
Oh,
it almost like, yeah. That's
Here's
what
the
shocked
thing.
Me.
When
the hypocrisy.
A.P. Singh, this defense lawyer, A.P. Singh, who had made this appalling comment to the waiting cameras when his clients were sentenced to death...
Right.
He said, if my daughter disgraced herself, and of course he means like Jyoti Singh disgraced herself,
right.
going to a movie at night with a friend, a male friend.
Yeah.
If my daughter disgraced herself, I would take her to my farmhouse and in front of my whole family, I would pour petrol on her and burn her alive. Mm-hmm. Now, when he said that, there were some murmurs of dissent within the Indian press to hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
When I came to interview him, that was 2-3 months after he had made that statement, because that statement in the film is archive material
right.
from TV.
Right.
And when I came to interview him, I was absolutely sure he would backpedal like crazy. He would say, well, I was emotional. The reason I said it was my clients had just lost, you know, been sentenced to death. Not a bit of it. He said, quite unashamed, I stand by that comment. Right. I believe every word I said.
Right.
They do believe this. It holds a mirror up to the thinking.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I get... And Jyoti's father, by the way, because you mentioned, yes, they worship Lakshmi, etc., Durga. Jyoti's father said an extraordinary thing that hasn't made it to the film. So much hasn't made it. I've got 87 hours of filmed material.
Oh, wow, we need to put up an unedited
well, we do.
Other version for online.
That'll make Modi and Rajnath Singh happy.
I
let's
know,
do
right?
it.
Seriously.
Well, if they don't lift the ban, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I pledge here and now. If that ban is not lifted by the end of this year, I'm going to start putting out all the footage I have
good.
On
good
the internet.
Good for you. We're marking you here right now, and it's going to happen.
Done deal.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm the one you marked it with.
One of the things that Badrinath, Jyoti's father, said was, we worship the goddess, but in our homes, we treat our women like footwear.
Mm-hmm.
That's quote-unquote what he said. And he should know. He's not a gory intruder into the culture.
Yeah.
He's from the culture.
Yeah.
Okay? So very often they won't take it from me because they like to shoot the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm the white-skinned intruder who they think has some white savior
complex.
Which,
by the way, people also think you're British, which obviously Indians and British people, you're not. You're Israeli. And it's so funny because every single article goes, British filmmaker. I'm like, no, it's Israeli.
Correct. But anyways. Of course, British filmmaker suits them because they have a chip on their shoulder from British colonial times.
Of course.
Well, I'm sorry. You can't blame me for that because I'm Israeli.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know. Anyway, I fly at 30,000 feet above this because the work at hand is so important.
Yes.
That actually the trolls can carry on.
Yeah.
They call me white bitch. You deserve to be raped. They say,
what?
I've had a few threats to my life. Yeah, from Indian men
but it's
tweeting.
It's so trivial at the bigger picture.
Sad.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so small compared to the big picture, which you're trying to fight for. Anyways.
And they're the pathetic, sad creatures that are about to be left behind.
Exactly.
You know? But I tell you, something that moved my heart to an extent that meant more to me than Meryl Streep saying last Wednesday to a New York audience when she introduced the film at a special screening, she said that she will campaign for this film until it wins the Oscar.
Yes.
And Sean Penn last night to an LA audience, he opened the film for us. And Sean Penn said, I didn't realize how important films were until last week when I saw India's Daughter for the first time.
Wow.
Now, more important than all of that, the thing I prize the most is this. On Sunday night, my Google alert, which comes in so often every day, came in with a picture. And I look at the picture and my heart soars because I go, thank God the protesters, the voices aren't silent anymore because of the little girls who were gang raped this weekend and the weekend before.
Yeah.
And I was so dismayed and disappointed that where were those beautiful protesters who protested the Nirbhaya gang rape and murder. Where were they now for these little girls?
Exactly.
A little girl of four
who
was lying in Safdarjung Hospital, the same hospital as Jyoti, on the day of the girl, the 11th of October. That's when it happened to her. And she lay there, had a three-hour operation, a four-year-old innocent little baby girl to fit a colostomy bag because what these men had done to her shredded her from vagina to anus, okay? And I at last saw a picture of protesters coming out onto the streets again. And I looked closer and my heart stopped. Because there were three placards in that photograph, and one placard said, don't teach me what to wear, teach your sons not to rape. And the other placard, held by the most beautiful young Indian woman I've ever seen, said, thank you, Leslie Udwin.
Oh my God, that just gave me goosebumps.
I want to meet that girl.
Wow.
She has meant more to me in holding that placard up than anything I can tell you.
Oh my gosh.
More to me than Meryl Streep and Sean Penn and all of them. Because the courage of that girl, A, to go out onto the streets again, and B, to hold up a hated name aloft. God bless that girl. Mujhe tumse bahut pyar hai. Mera dil bhi kitna pagal hai. Ye mera sobhagya hai.
That's such an honor.
That is an honor. That has made all this painful journey worthwhile.
Exactly.
Just
this two-year nightmare of yours and that one sign can just change it around.
Everything.
It's like that one small difference is just a huge difference. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow. That must have been a really...
It was amazing.
I mean, I could tell it's a very heart-wrenching moment for you.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sure during this two-year journey, you wanted to give up.
Oh, I did
You wanted to go home.
Yeah. One day I did give up.
And by the way, I have to say that's more Hindi than I can speak, so good for you on that one.
So there was one morning when I did give up, and I wanted nothing more than just to go home and forget I'd ever embarked on this horrific nightmare journey. And I think, casting back, what led me to that moment of complete despair where I just didn't want to go on anymore was the interview with that man who had raped the five-year-old.
Oh.
Because I have a daughter, I've been raped. You know, it gets personal at a certain point.
It does, yeah.
And my daughter was 13 when I left Copenhagen to go to India to start making this film. And I could remember as though it was yesterday what she was at five, you know. And when he took me through all the details over those 3 hours, how he took her from both sides. How when I said to him, do you think about her? Do you, you know, when you lie alone in your cell at night, because I was trying to see, is there any remorse there? Is there any regret? Because he wasn't expressing any. I said, you know, does she come into your thoughts? And he said, yes. And then I have to go to the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
So help me God. This is what he said. I've got it on film, right?
Yeah.
I'll be releasing that perhaps too.
You should.
Well, let them lift the ban, you know, yeah. And I might think again. But yeah. Here's the thing. It so depressed me. It so deeply hurt me that it was beyond anger.
Mm-hmm.
It was the deepest, most profound pity I could ever express, you know. And that, I think, is what made me get to the point where I woke up one morning in my hotel room and I was shaking. Just woke up shaking, shivering. I don't know what I'd gone through during my 2 hour sleep that night, but my teeth were chattering. I was wet from head to toe. The sheets were wet. And I just thought, oh my God, I'm going crazy. I have to stop this. I have to go home right now, or I have to call a doctor and get into a hospital. So I call home, and it was like after 12 in Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
It was 5:30 in the morning in Delhi. And I thought, Kim, my husband, will answer, and I'm just going to tell him to book me a flight, because I didn't even have the strength or presence of mind to book a flight. It was a breakdown, mm-hmm. right? My daughter answers the phone. She shouldn't have been awake, but she was.
Interesting.
And I go, hello? And she hears that, and she goes, what's wrong, Mummy? And I said, nothing. I'm okay, Maya. I tried to kind of raise my voice so that she wouldn't mm-hmm. get too alarmed. She was 13 and a half at this point, because it was 6 months into filming. And she said, what's wrong? You tell me. And I just collapsed. I couldn't hold on anymore, and the tears were rolling, and I was just hysterical. She started talking me through breathing exercises.
Oh, wow.
Telling me to breathe in through my nose, out through my mouth. And then she said, I want you now to go and get a pen and paper. And I left a decent pause, because I didn't have a pen and paper. And I said, I've got a pen and paper now. She said, go and get a pen and paper. I still had to pretend, wow. But I left a longer pause, right? Because I didn't have one.
Right.
And then she said, now I want you to write down all your problems. And I want you to start solving them tomorrow. You're going back to sleep now for a couple of hours. And when you wake up, you're going to start solving your problems by starting with the little ones, not the big ones.
Wow.
And I
remind me how old she...
She was 13 and a half.
Oh, my gosh. Strong
and
females
then,
running your family.
Well, yeah. She's so much wiser, more mature, and more brilliant than I am, this little kid. I tell you, no, I'll tell you in a minute.
Wow.
She really is. And at that point, she said to me the words that I'll never forget as long as I live, and the words that made me stay, because I still would have gone. I was in such a state. And she said, and Mummy, you are not coming home because I and my generation of girls are relying on you. And that was it.
Very powerful.
I stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I say she's more mature and wiser than I am, I really mean it. She mm-hmm. is responsible for at least half of the foundational thinking of the solution to the problem. Because
yeah.
that's what I'm now giving my life over to.
Right.
So I'm not making any more films.
Right.
Which will surprise, by the way, those trolls who have said that I made this film for financial motive.
Yeah, I okay? actually, that was my next point before we go into just the ban and the conclusion.
Yeah.
What shocks me actually is Jaya Bachchan's comment.
Yes. And I've called her
Jaya
out.
Jaya Bachchan being Amitabh Bachchan's wife, being yeah. a very esteemed Bollywood actress and individual, did not see your documentary.
No.
But she didn't want to. She thought that this documentary was giving more fame, so to speak, to the rapist himself, A. B, it was a commercialized documentary, I guess. And
how
C,
dare she?
You were gaining profit. D, you were paying the rapist. I don't know what you probably went through when you heard all that.
I mean, seriously disappointed that a woman can come up with all those pathetic, disgusting lies Jaya Bachchan. Mm-hmm. And I have called her onto programs. When I was interviewed in March by Voice of America, I said to them, get Jaya Bachchan on the program. Get some of these feminists who have come out against the film, because that's the other really disappointing thing. Feminists who are supposed to be fighting for women, only in India, this is, in my experience, it's the Indian feminists who have come out against the film, or some of them, not all of them. And I said, you know, call Jaya Bachchan onto the program so we can have a proper debate, so I can tell her that not only did I not pay the rapists, but because I refused to pay Avnindra Pandey, Jyoti's friend,
who was on the bus with her,
I lost the most important and the only prosecution witness.
I know.
If I'd paid anyone, it would have been him.
Exactly.
How can you make a film about this case without Avnindra's testimony? Well, I was forced to, because Avnindra would not come on.
I was shocked
and
he wouldn't
interview.
Want to come on.
Because he wouldn't be paid. I wouldn't pay him. He
Doesn't
demanded
he
money.
Be the voice for this cause? Because he's
Clearly
the one himself
not.
Said this this was not true facts. I and Jyoti know what exactly happened, and everyone else is falsifying it. I'm
so
like,
why
what
didn't
the,
he come on
happened?
And tell the true facts?
I know.
And you see, here's the thing. Why does he say the documentaries are fake, these are not true facts?
Right.
Because now that he refused, because he was immoral and asked for money for an interview that Jyoti would have wanted him to give to prevent other women from going through the same thing.
Right.
But he was so greedy that he could only think of his money. Now, the last word on his involvement in the evening comes from Mukesh, who tells us if he's to be believed. And Mukesh has been pretty honest in this interview, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
He tells us that Avnindra hid between the seats. Now, I wouldn't be judgmental about that, frankly. If that is what Avnindra did, he's human. He's faced with six men and an inevitability of a gruesome, fatal attack. What's he going to do? This isn't Bollywood.
Yeah.
This is real life.
That's true.
What's he going to do? Jump these six men like some hero?
Exactly.
You know.
Totally.
So whatever the truth of that is, well, but the bottom line is, why do I tell you about Avnindra? Not because I am happy and ready to snitch on people, but because he threw that stone.
Mm-hmm.
People throw a stone at me, I'll throw a boulder back.
Right.
And I'm fearless. And I will tell the truth no matter what. You know? So Jaya Bachchan, ponder for 5 minutes. If I paid the rapists, if I had the money to pay people, I was spending my own money. I'm still seriously in debt for making this film.
Yeah, it came out of your own pocket.
Yeah.
All of it.
Not all of it. BBC put 40%
right,
in.
Right, that's what I mistook
60%
in the
came out of my own pocket.
Right.
Actually, to be absolutely accurate, probably 50% came out of my pocket.
Right.
Because I did get, you know, a small grant here and a small grant there.
Right.
$5,000, you know, I mean, like, bits and pieces. But the film cost a great deal of money to make. The lawyer's fees were enormous.
What about Jyoti's parents? Are they, I mean, of course, they're just so, probably in shock.
And they're totally in shock.
What is their condition right now? I mean, are they being helped in any way? Or are the families being...
They
you know
were helped by the then government, of course. And they were, for example, given a new apartment so that their conditions could be more comfortable. And they were helped, I believe, with their son's education because they have two sons.
Okay.
But, I mean, what is help when you're choked with grief?
Exactly.
What kind of help can make them okay? The thing they're praying for, the thing they're longing for, the thing that will help them get some kind of closure is real fast track in this case, as the government promised them they would have and the judiciary promised. They said this was the fast track of case of India. Well, excuse me, it'll have been nearly 6 years by the time the Supreme Court judgment comes through.
Right.
You know, now they want the rapists to hang. That's what they're waiting for. I think that's going to solve nothing, and I don't believe in the death penalty.
Neither does India, which is why it's taking forever for it to happen.
Well,
they
it's
have
taking...
been sentenced, but it's just
yes.
There's so many rape cases in India, but there's just no punishment for these men.
No, that's right.
That's the
right, and that's why these men actually are so affronted. They don't feel regret; they feel affronted and indignant. Why are they being made an example of and being given the death penalty when everybody's doing it?
Exactly.
And I'm sorry to say, there's a point there.
Yeah, that's true. There is. That's like an ongoing issue that I don't even know what could be solved. But I don't know. I mean, Narendra Modi, I don't really know what he's up to.
Well, I can only say
he did comment on the actual incident. He commented on the ban, saying the reason there was a ban of this documentary is because of more of legality.
Yeah,
the
but issues this is there nonsense. Saying,
right. So what he said was that the identity of Jyothi was revealed. So was the rapists and a couple other things.
So but, first of all, there is no bar whatsoever in revealing the identity of the rapists.
Right.
It was all over the Indian media.
Right.
I'm sure Mr. Modi ji reads the newspapers.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Those rapists were named, identified, there were pictures out of them long before I came and pointed my camera at anyone.
Mm-hmm.
As far as revealing the name of Jyothi Singh, the Indian version of the film does not reveal her name.
Right.
I had gone to India specifically at my own expense because I gave this film for free to NDTV.
Right.
Because I felt that, you know, I was grateful to India for coming out onto the streets. I thought, I'm not making one penny out of the Indian distribution, not even to pay me back my costs.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Jaya Bachchan, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what kind of a gori I am, okay? So,
you have such courage, I love it.
Well, I have
but
to tell the truth.
But you already, yeah, exactly.
We have to move on. We have to
you
progress.
Have to. Yeah.
So, I gave the film to NDTV for free. I went there at my own expense to cut the Indian version of the film because I would never dream of breaking the law anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a responsible, law-abiding human being.
Exactly.
The India version of the film does not mention her name or her parents' name so that no link can be made. But they banned the India version of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So because of their ban, the BBC version of the film was leaked onto the internet, and now everyone in India knows her name.
Mm-hmm.
So the ban was responsible for the leaking and the publishing of the name. Shall we sue them?
Right.
Shall we sue Rajnath Singh, the Home Minister, for causing the name to be revealed by banning the film that did not reveal the name responsibly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a ridiculous mess.
It is a mess.
Here's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
They made a mistake. They banned a film without seeing it.
Right.
That's a big mistake.
That is.
Having made the mistake, just be courageous enough. Man up.
Mm-hmm.
Be courageous enough to say, okay, we made a mistake. That, what they did with porn sites recently, are you aware of that? 897 porn sites were banned about 6 weeks ago.
And then they released it. Yeah.
They lifted the ban within 1 week. Why? Because Indian men cried out, you can't take our pornography away from us. We're a democracy. Democracies don't trample on freedom of expression. But it's okay for the democracy to trample on the freedom of expression of a public interest documentary that the entire international community praises for calling for justice and rights for women. What message are you sending to the world? Are you asleep?
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking at all? Because you are so worried about shame and accuse me of bringing a conspiracy to shame India. You are shaming India.
Is it not an excuse either that they fear it's going to just cause more violence and protests? That's just
well, there
another...
was that. There was that. Yes, I got
and
an
possibly
email.
Possibly even more rapes just because of the anger.
Well,
you know?
First of all, they can't be more
rapes. I don't know if
they're
fear. I don't know. Yeah, they're already enough. But I don't know if they had that fear.
They're
afraid. They're cowards. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's a.
I don't know. But the thing is, if they think it's going to cause more rapes, if as the, you know, that small band of feminists who called for the ban on this film,
right.
The feminists called for right. the ban on this film, and I will never forgive them for that. They are destined for that special place in hell that Madeleine Albright speaks about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, having, saying that this film gives a platform to the rapists and that there will be more rapes as a result. Well, admit you've made a mistake because
mm-hmm.
I can show you hundreds of emails I've had from Indian men. I can show you emails from Indian men who have confessed rapes to me in these emails and said this documentary has made them stop in their tracks and they feel so ashamed and they feel so...
Wow.
That can't be a bad thing, can
no,
it?
Not at all.
Show me one rape that has been committed that is linked to this documentary. If we could get into the homes and the streets, we could probably show you several rapes that did not get committed.
Right.
You know,
right,
if one could prove a negative.
Right.
But, you know, I've had emails from women who have suffered serial abuse, who have said they found a power through seeing this documentary, and they have found their strength and their self-respect again, and they are now going to become activists and work to stop this from happening to other women.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we talking about? The film gives a platform to the rapists is some intellectual notion
right.
that has no meaning. Parliament gives a platform mm-hmm. to the rapists
yeah,
when parliamentarians in India have stood up and made hate-filled comments about women.
Mm-hmm.
Where have I ever heard a cry from anyone in India, this parliament is giving a platform to misogynist views?
Mm-hmm. Are you hopeful at all that the ban will be lifted? What's that?
I was hopeful. I can't say I am, because there have been now 4 adjournments of a petition brought by 2 upstanding, enlightened, wonderful Indian citizens, one of whom is a journalist,
mm-hmm.
the other of whom I think is a social activist.
Mm-hmm.
And they have brought this petition to the Delhi High Court, Justice Rohini sitting on the case.
Mm.
4 adjournments since March, I think, or April, when they first brought it. And the first 2 adjournments were on the basis that the government needed more time to get its case together.
Right.
And the last 2 adjournments have been for, you know, spurious reasons. I think the last one was that the judge didn't have her full personnel in court. So now it's adjourned to the 9th of December. I'm heartbroken that the Indian people who I love and admired so much, who came out onto those streets, have been so silent. They've fallen into apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is... that has really tarnished my optimism, I have to tell you.
Mm.
Where are those voices now?
Yeah.
Why aren't they calling for the lifting of the ban? So I don't know. It may be that there is such an oppressive sense of fear now in the Indian community, because this government is banning left, right and centre. It's banned Greenpeace, for God's sake. Greenpeace, which is just trying to fight for our planet.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't know. I can't say I'm optimistic anymore, no. But I have come to the point where now I don't care anymore. Of course I care that, you know, India should be part of this global campaign.
Well, you're fighting a bigger issue right now.
I am. I'm fighting a global issue. If India wants to stay stuck with its head in the sand, nothing I can do about it.
Right.
Let them. I'll focus on the rest of the world. Thank you very much.
Definitely. You're focusing on gender inequality, which is like the biggest thing. You're focusing on increasing education in these countries that need
yes.
it. You know, it's funny because, of course, you make these films and you talk about issues. Even being a journalist myself, you hope to evoke a change. But the only thing I see it brings is just people talk, which is a great step. People talking about it. I mean, we already talked about your supporters. And these are like high supporters I'm talking about. Entertainment industry people, political industry people who have a voice, who could very well influence the leaders who make the decisions maybe down the line. But people are stirring conversations, whether it's on YouTube or on Twitter or on Facebook. But what change could be made? Like, what are the actions that we can do, or that India's daughter is doing right now, like your campaign? And
I'm very clear about what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have, over a 2.5-year period, steeped myself in this issue, and I am very clear about what the problem is. The
mm-hmm.
problem is mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also very clear about what the solution is. And what gave me the insight into that was when I realized that of the 7 rapists, only one of them had finished his education. I thought, well, that's significant, isn't it? They've had no access to education, so it's the poverty, the lack of education. Then I went and interviewed the lawyers.
Right, who
so
are
I,
educated.
As educated as you get.
Right.
So it's nothing to do with access to education.
Right.
So I'm still inquiring and kicking it about and brainstorming with my daughter, who by now was 15 and something, because this was
mm-hmm.
in April of this year.
Right.
When the epiphany, if you like, or the answer came from this feisty discussion with my daughter. And we started thinking about what is it we are teaching. We're teaching our children to read, write, and count. We're educating their heads. We're not educating their hearts. Mm-hmm. Nowhere are we responsibly as a world taking care of the moral, the spiritual education of our children. And I don't even want to put it in kind of, you know, academic terms. Respect, mm-hmm. empathy, gender sensitization, freeing girls and boys
right.
of the strictures of gender stereotypes. When I ask these rapists, what is a man? What is manhood? They have very clear notions of what manhood is. I pity them living a life mm-hmm. in which you can't fail, you can't express emotion. I pity these men. They need to be emancipated from that too.
Right.
Women are programmed and men are programmed, and nowhere are we working to teach them that, yes, they can cry, and to teach the girls that they have every equal right to a voice and to participate in the economy of the country and the politics and the decision-making. So we have to teach human rights, and we have to teach it on a compulsory basis, mm-hmm. and we have to teach it from the first day of entry of a child into school, because we only have between the ages of 3 and 5 a really narrow window to change behavior and attitudes. That's what neuroscience tells us. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, between 0 and 6 years old, mm-hmm. and very specifically in terms of cognitive modifiability, between 3 and 5. How mm-hmm. irresponsible are we
right.
that we are totally neglecting making sure that in a school where a kid is there for a journey that will lead to lifelong learning, this child is not even being told mm-hmm. what it's like to be another person. Is not even being told that every human being, regardless of their color, their creed, mm-hmm. their religion, or their gender, is also valuable. Mm-hmm. What do we expect? How do we expect them to behave? Empathy isn't a quality that comes naturally to a human being.
Right.
It has to be practiced. It has to be taught.
Right.
So I'm now advising the UN Human Rights Office on this Equality Studies Global Initiative. I'm asking education ministers around the world to endorse and co-opt the global curriculum in human rights, which I have a committee of 20 experts and visionaries in education, in gender, human rights, and psychology. I'm gathering together this committee who are going to be designing and constructing in great minute detail those exercises and instruments and songs and books and poems and drawings mm. that teach a child respect for another human being, that teach a child empathy, that teach a child what emotions are,
right.
how to identify emotions.
Right.
Okay? And we are going to have this global curriculum set by the end of this of next year.
Oh, wow.
The following year, and that's the early years curriculum, the following year in 2017, while we're designing the middle years curriculum, mm-hmm. the adopting countries, of which I have 8 already,
okay.
those adopting countries are going to be adapting the global curriculum because there has to be cultural flexibility.
Right.
And in the final year, when we're designing the senior years curriculum, the adopting countries start rolling out the early years curriculum in their countries on a compulsory basis from the first day of education of a child. That is when the world will change, and it's the only way to change the world, as far as I'm concerned.
You're like an actress turned filmmaker turned activist. Mm-hmm. And I think every single part of your journey is leading you to do, you know, such important things for this world. And you can't do it alone. You totally can't.
No.
So for those who want, who've been very inspired by today's interview, where can you tell them to follow you and be more informed?
So certainly on www.indiasdaughter.com. Mm-hmm. And we have a sister website now for the American release of the film.
Okay.
Called www.ourdaughter2.com.
Okay.
This was inspired by something Meryl Streep said back in March when she first saw the film. And she said, Jyoti is India's daughter. She's our daughter too. And mm-hmm. made the point, as the film does, that this is
right.
a global pandemic.
Right.
So on that website, we do have various suggestions. Clearly, people can lend their energies. They can send us glittering materials that will help our education curriculum,
mm-hmm.
because as far as I'm concerned, we need as many researchers as we can get. We're, right. you know, like magpies gathering together all of right. these gems to put into our curriculum. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's listening to this who has any money can donate, because we have to hire our education director, our research team. We have to fly me around the world. Mm-hmm. I'm depleted. I have no more funds. Mm-hmm. My daughter's gone without a tutor this year that she badly needs because I can't afford it. Okay, mm-hmm. You can host screenings, you can keep the conversations going, because the awareness mm-hmm. goes hand in hand with a readiness to adopt a solution. There's a lot people can do. And here's very importantly, uh-huh. you can come to the theatre and watch the film and bring people with you
yes.
on the 23rd, which is this Friday, mm-hmm. in New York.
Okay.
At the Village East Cinema.
Okay.
And next Friday, the 30th uh-huh. of October, at the Sundance Sunset Theatre in LA, mm-hmm. we have 5 screenings a day for a week in each of those cinemas. I'm glad to tell you we've also got distributors who have said they're taking the film on now beyond and going wider, which is fantastic.
Great, yes.
And then the last thing you can do is spread the word that on the 8th of March next year, International Women's Day, Bianca Jagger and I are calling a strike of all women and girls the world over. We want every woman to down tools, to stop looking after the children, let the men do that, to leave their supportive roles mm-hmm. and let their men, male bosses mm-hmm. take care of that, to walk out of parliaments, to down tools and go on strike, demanding the respect they deserve, demanding gender inequality, the last unfinished business mm-hmm. of our world.
Wow. That's happening next March.
Next March on the 8th.
Okay. Next March.
Spread
on the
8th. Word.
Yeah, no,
we
definitely.
Want
I didn't know
everyone
about that.
Out there on those streets.
Okay, great. Wow.
And of course, men are welcome. Enlightened men
course,
are welcome.
Of course, yes. I mean, I imagine the younger generation attending, because they are the ones.
Yes.
They are the ones who want to see a change.
Yes.
Men and women alike, honestly.
Well,
so it's up
we
to
must
us.
Demand a change yeah. rather than just want to see it, because we've
of
been
course.
Wanting to see it
for a long
for
time.
For 2 millennia.
We're sitting back and we just need to take
We need
more
to do
action.
It now. We need to take it in our hands and take that power that is rightfully ours.
Leslie, I can't thank you enough for being part of this movement, for making a change of this movement, being a voice that just needs to be heard. I can't thank you enough.
I'm just a vehicle. I'm compelled to do this.
Exactly.
I have every pressing reason to not do it. I have to do it because the change has to come now. So it's not me. I'm the vehicle through which this voice is. Mm-hmm. And it's gathering momentum. And look
Definitely.
At all these amazing supporters. It's not Definitely. Me alone doing this.
No.
It's wonderful.
Definitely. And can you please remind all the fans and the followers, where can they find you on Twitter? And India's
at,
daughter's social media as well.
So we're at Leslie Adwin, L-E-S-L-E-E, my mother couldn't spell, and at India's daughter.
Okay, perfect.
And please tweet, and please beg the government to stop this ban so India can hold its head up high again, as it rightly deserves to do, for being the only country in the world that has demanded a change in the way those brilliant, amazing protesters did. Please. Kripya.
Shukya. Thank you guys so much for watching. I hope you just at least took away a little bit more knowledge than you had before, and definitely be part of this movement. I'm your host, Kanika Lal. Follow me on Twitter at Kanika Lal, all the updates. I will be certainly tweeting and retweeting Leslie's updates as well, so we can all be informed, as well as follow Popcorn Talk Network on all social media. Thank you again. I'll see you guys next week on Bollywood.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.